Hello, everyone. This is Lee Winter, and I am with the fabulous...
EJ Noyes. Thank you for calling me fabulous.
The bribe is still clearing, so I might take it back by the end of the conversation.
All right. All right. I'll take it.
So, Emily, you want to tell us what we're doing?
Well, obviously, we're having a little chat. This was an idea that came about... I think we saw some things on Facebook where you and I had had a few little interactions of the amusing sort, and someone said that we should have a chat. And so we sort of agreed to, I think it was like a year ago maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, little do people know that I'm actually not funny unless I'm on the internet. So you guys, it's going to be just a lot of blathering.
I just think I'm funny because my girlfriend tells me quite assuredly that I am not funny.
I tend to
believe her most of the time. So I'm going to do a thing like on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, when Willow came out to Buffy. Buffy was trying to act like she wasn't freaked out, but she was freaked out because she kept saying Willow's name all the time. So to split up our accents, because maybe Americans especially can't pick the Aussie accents, I'm going to be saying Emily's name a lot. So okay. You know who's talking and who's not.
You know, now that I'm wonderfully unemployed, but we used to have a manager of one of the properties being sheep and cattle, that used to ring all the time, and he would always say your name, and even in emails, like, okay, so Emily, I just want to make sure that you've got this, no good Emily, that's really good. So Emily, I was just wondering if you could, and it starts to make me a little bit weird because nobody calls me Emily at all. It's Em. That's, you know, the only time I get called Emily is when I'm in trouble. So
Em it is.
Em it is.
Now,
yep.
You mentioned you were unemployed. What's happened there? Has there been a life change in the last year?
Oh, oof, massive life change. I was made redundant in May, which was not unexpected. I'd been coming for a couple of years, so that was actually pretty exciting for me personally to spend some time, you know, for the first time in 25 years, just not working. But of course, you know, we were supposed to move to New Zealand in May, but that has not happened, and I keep justifying my unemployment by saying there's no point in getting a job, you know, for maybe I'll just have to quit in a month when we get to move to New Zealand.
And what line of work are you in, for people who don't have the foggiest notion?
I've never been a career person. I've always just been a job person, and as long as I'm happy in the job, then that's fine. You know, I taught horse riding for over 10 years, and then I moved into an office job, which was great because it had air conditioning and, you know, things like paid leave. But yeah, I was basically just a basic office job in the livestock industry, I will call it. But the business folded after 121 years. And
that was not COVID related, was it? Because that happened.
It was not, no, yeah. Not at all. The timing was just really spectacular. And the timing was really good because, you know, I was supposed to finish the job at the end of May when the business wound up. And then, you know, just jump on a plane and with all my belongings on a ship and off to New Zealand. But it just...
You know, is the dream for a lot of people, to go to New Zealand, the heartland of the Jacinda and the roaming sheep.
Absolutely, my queen. I can't wait to worship at her altar. But, you know, we spent a lot of time in New Zealand. We got married in New Zealand right before it became legal in Australia, for the sole purpose of my wife knew that she, or my almost wife at that stage, knew that she was looking for jobs overseas, being super smart PhD science lady that she is. And, you know, if I wanted to go, then I needed to marry her. So we sort of did. It was the most sort of anticlimactic wedding. We went skiing, and it was a ski holiday with a wedding involved. You know, we go there pretty much every year to ski, except this year, obviously. It's just such a great place, and I can't wait to get over there because it's, you know, we're moving to Dunedin where it's not hot.
It's freezing in Dunedin. I say this as someone who was born in New Zealand. Not many people know this. I was born in Christchurch.
I do know that.
And it is the bloody coldest place, I tell you. It just, it's freezing. So you're going from very warm Queensland,
very
Australia,
warm
to very cold Dunedin, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Are you mentally prepared for this?
I have been prepared my whole life. I'm one of those people. I was born in Brisbane, Queensland, and I've always stayed around this sort of little bubble. I've just never really had cause to leave. And I hate the heat. I hate it. If it gets above 20, I'm like, stuff this. I'm done. Like, you know, my ideal temperature is like 10 degrees Celsius or below. So I'm not made for the climate in which I live. So I can't wait to get to Dunedin for it to be cold and rainy and, you know, like windy and overcast. Like I am primed. This is, my body is ready.
20 degrees so Celsius, Americans, is 68 degrees Fahrenheit. I just looked that up. Aren't I handy?
Oh, did you just Google that?
I just Googled that.
Translation.
So what's the plan now? When are you going to New Zealand? I mean, hasn't that bubble been open between Queensland and New Zealand, or am I just imagining this?
You're imagining it. Wishful thinking. I'm imagining it too. So the deal at the moment is New Zealand's allowed to come to Australia, but nobody's allowed to go to New Zealand unless you're a New Zealand citizen, which we are not. It's just it's a really interesting sort of just being on hold scenario.
So have you been filling your unemployment time now with any writing?
I have, which is good. I've actually been pretty productive, which surprised me. You know, like showers every day and, you know, getting actually dressed instead of just wearing pajamas constantly, which I was pretty proud of. But I've written one novel, which I'm currently editing, so I'm going to mangle the French, please excuse me. Pas des Dux, which is the Dressage Olympic sort of Enemies to Lover book, which is out in May, so I got that written. I also wrote one novel as well in my series, which I'm sort of hoping to get three, maybe four novels, and also a short, which is in an anthology that will be coming out in May. So I guess you could say full-time writing.
Bloody hell, that's impressive. A lot of people are really struggling creatively because, you know, there's so much going on and you can't blame them. I mean, their brains are just overflowing, and that here you are, productive little soul that you are. So that's amazing.
Yeah, look at me. And, you know, I've done, I thought I might as well try some school as well. So I've been doing an editing course, which finishes this week, actually, which has been interesting and really, really helpful, actually. Yeah, and I mean, I might do a bit more, but I mean, I never went to uni at all. I was accepted into some equine studies course and decided not to go because I sort of thought, well, what's it going to teach me that I don't already know? So studying at the age of very close to 40 has been a really interesting experience because I'm not intellectually minded at all. Like, I'm not that kind of brain. And so it's been, it's been all right. And I think the reason it's been okay is because it's an interesting subject. As my wife keeps saying, you know, if you're interested, then you're gonna want to do it instead of, you know, say, I'll just play a game instead.
Gaming. Now, there's a topic.
There is a topic. I was thinking this morning that I think the last time I spoke to you was when you asked me to jump in game so that you could make me off myself, which probably requires a little bit of context and clarification. So
what does it?
Explain that one.
For a while we were playing Fallout 76, and one of the parts of the game that I was trying to do was to earn a scout badge, and that was to be helpful to people. And one of the things you could get your badge on, you had to revive someone who died, but I didn't know anyone, and no one was dying around me, or they'd die and someone else would rush in and save them, bastards. So I messaged Emily and asked her if she'd be okay with, like, throwing herself off a cliff in front of me, and just so I could revive her. And I've done this twice now because I restarted the game at one point. So twice now she has waded to my rescue, agreed to be killed.
Killed, that's
and
right.
And resurrected.
Did it once more, didn't
and
you?
I did
it. Oh,
my...
I think I had to kill you for once.
Did you
well.
Now? I don't remember that. But, you know, no grudges.
No, so... none at all. But, yeah, and the problem is, of course, is because I sort of stopped playing the game because, you know, just reasons, and I was having controller issues and just getting frustrated. So I sort of stopped playing. And, of course, you know, games are updating all the time. So every time Lee would ask me to come and, like, be a sacrificial lamb, I'd be like, okay, I'll be there in, like, 3 days once the game's done, like,
yeah,
a massive
1.3 gigabyte update. Oh, my God, that game's terrible at that.
Like, that I had actually deleted Fallout 76 from my computer because I ran out of space because the Call of Duty games were so big. So I'm afraid I can't come.
Are you enjoying Call of Duty? Is it good?
Oh, absolutely. It's so good. They've just had a new one that's just come out very recently, like a week or so ago, that's a different sort of vibe to the one before that was at the end of 2019. But it's, I mean, I do like first-person shooter games, so it suits me, and I get to play with a mate in the UK, and also Kate Gavin, who's another Bella author in the US, plays it as well. So, you know, we're good friends.
Well, I can't game at all anymore, and I'm very sad. I can't game and I can't write because I've bugged up my shoulder and have for the last 4 months. And I
How's that going?
Awful. Sitting at a desk is just hell.
Just the worst.
So then I've been doing the tragic thing of trying to write in bed, which is just the most unergonomic thing you can possibly do. My physios have been laughing at me, and in sort of a pitying way, not in even a, oh, that's hilarious, Lee's funny. And then I've been trying to write using, like, Dragon software, which, by the way, is fantastic software. It's a dictation software, so I'm lying in bed, being tragic, and speaking the words that I want to write on the page. Now, I have discovered from doing this that I don't write that way. I mean, even if the words flow on the page exactly right, I realise now that I write a sentence and I look at it and tweak maybe a word, move on to the next one and then tweak a word, and it's just not really designed for dictation software. So that's been frustrating. So it's just really like I'm just spinning my wheels at the moment.
What about a standing workspace?
No, I tried that too and my back was just like, oh. Please.
Still not. Okay.
So, okay, so all right. So I'm going to confess, even more tragic than the bed is my current plan, because I've always got a plan in place, you see. So I've ordered this, I suppose you call it a reclining chair, and it's called the Ergo Hot Game Chair or something. So when I'm trying not to sound tragic, I say, look, it says gaming in it. And when I'm trying to write it off on tax, I'll be saying, look, it says ergonomic in it.
Ergonomic, that's it.
And I'm still waiting for it to arrive, but Sam just took one look at it. You know, this picture of this person sprawled out virtually horizontally in this, like, ergo gaming chair, and said, so basically it's just like a chair bed.
The best kind of chair.
And I went, it's a chair bed.
I feel like I've seen a picture of that. Did you put it on Facebook? And it's like got like workspace around it, like almost in a semicircle.
Wouldn't that be cool? I'd like it, one of the scorpion chairs, which is like $10,000, which is just phenomenal. Like the monitor comes down from over your head, and the armrests come up from the seat. It's just like cool. But yeah, so I haven't received my chair yet, my chair bed, my ergonomic gaming thing yet. So I will have to report back as to whether it was just more flinging money into the wind. But, yeah, for right now, no writing, no gaming. Lee is sad, sadly.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure everyone who enjoys your work is sad, but I do see whispers around the internet about Hotel Queens being yet another winter hit.
Yes.
Which I'm excited for.
That has indeed perked up my spirits. Thank you, lovely readers who have slapped your dough down and made tragically less tragic. Was really unexpected.
It's like you go down so Lee can buy her ergonomic gaming chair so that she can keep writing hits like Hotel Queens.
That is the plan. Oh my god, imagine if it turns up and it's absolutely useless and I'm just, you know, I've got this monstrosity in my home. But
do you do now?
I don't know. This is my last roll of the dice. Otherwise, I just don't know. I have no idea. This is slightly depressing, isn't it? So, okay, let's change the topic. So you don't tend to read books so much as listen to them, is that right?
That's correct. In the last sort of year or so, I've sort of moved from reading, and I'll sort of put a caveat on that, is that it's only sort of lesfic. You know, I realised after some prompting from someone very recently in the last few days that I actually have read no new lesfic this year at all. And I mean, it's not COVID related. I think it's just my brain is so full with, you know, like New Zealand move, trying to write a bunch of books so that when I do move, you know, I've got a little bit of a buffer and whatnot. But I've definitely found that reading lesfic since I started writing lesfic, I just, it really triggers my sort of insecurity, man. but audiobooks are a lot easier because I feel a little bit less shit about my own sort of work if I'm listening rather than reading, which is...
Well, I think I would speak for your readers when I say your books are fabulous. How do you have insecurity about them? I mean, like, for instance, Alone, that was just, like, on everyone's favourite list for last year. So how are you feeling insecure when everyone loves your work?
I mean, I don't know. I think all writers have some degree of insecurity or imposter syndrome, and that's obviously a poor generalisation. You know, it's that old sort of saying is where you can read, like, 1,000 good reviews and you'll read one crap one and be like, well, that's it. Everything sucks.
The mean ones. And not the just the, oh, this wasn't for me. We're talking the mean ones that are designed to fail, hurt, sting.
Like, never write again. Okay. I do think a really whopping dose of imposter syndrome, and I don't know how you sort of get past that, you know, in, without ego, you know, like, I know that people have enjoyed my work and I know, you know, they've won Goldie Awards and this and that and the other, but there's always that sort of niggling thing, like, you know, is this the last decent book I'm ever going to write? You know, is this going to be the one that everybody hates? And it sort of is that, you know, like, trying to get your little inner critic to shut the F up is hard sometimes.
Profound words, Em.
Yeah.
We have questions, people. We wrote each other questions. Or actually, Em wrote this great list of questions, and I stole, I think, four of her questions, which I thought were fantastic. So hit me with your first question.
Okay. What would your significant other, so that is Sam, the infamous Sam, who I would love to meet, but also wouldn't, because I think she just, like, tear strips off me, which would make me sad. What would your significant other say is your worst habit?
Well, I actually asked her this because I thought I can't possibly choose, the list is so long. And she laughed for a good half minute and then said, well, pedantry, because I'm so sorry. I'm one of those people who just has to correct the missing apostrophe and stuff. And if a word is, if it's used wrongly, I'm just like, nyeh. And then anyway, after she said pedantry, she said, no, actually, that's not the worst one. I was like, oh, God.
Oh, God.
She said punning. I pun all the time. I think I'm hilarious, like I said before. She does not agree. I think puns are fabulous. But, yes, look, honestly, half of that comes from writing headlines. Like, for years, I had to write headlines for my paper. And, you know, I was known for writing the puns and the headlines. Now I just can't stop thinking of them, so... You know, and you know, Em, you actually have, quote-unquote, met Sam. I don't know if you remember this, but when we were playing Fallout 76, you showed me your house, which was under a pylon, and Sam had walked into the room, and she didn't realise the audio was on, and she was like...
Oh, I think you're right.
She was like, what? Why would she live there? She was just like...
She was dissing my house.
And suddenly this voice pipes up from the other end of the computer, and she almost jumped a foot, and it said... You know, I know it's not much, but it's home. And Sam's eyes just went really wide. She went, she mouthed, she can hear me. She backed out of the room. God, it was funny.
I mean, I'm terrible. I can barely remember what I did yesterday. My wife Phoebe, or Phoebs as she's more better known, or OH as in other half, told me today about something that I'd done, apparently, guarding one of the horses that she'd bred years ago, and I was like, I do not remember that at all. Like, did I really, you know, make a phone? I made a phone call to inquire about this horse and, you know, got some information about it. And I was like, I'm like, that is just not in my brain at all. You know, like, I'm new info comes in, old info goes out. Like, I'm just not good at retaining.
So, is that what Phoebs would think is your worst habit, or do you think she's got
not.
A better one?
Oh, God, no. But I have to ask, like, I think you're funny, so, you know, like, sorry, Sam. But also, like, is it wrong, especially for an editor, to be, like, pedantic about things?
I don't think so, but I think it leaks. It shouldn't probably leak into friendships and relationships.
No, actually, that's something in this editing course I'm doing where the overall rule is don't be a jerk. So, as long as you're not being a jerk about it, then who cares?
I try not to be, but then, look, a friend of mine who I admired a great deal, who was this very good editor, said to me once, I never make a mistake, and she's talking like the apostrophes and stuff, the stuff that she wouldn't make. I never make a mistake, but I don't leave them either. And what she meant was if she was at, a market stall and she saw an error, she'd point it out to the stall owner so that they wouldn't look silly. because she was telling me this after we saw a sign for Cos Lettuce, C-O apostrophe S.
And the greengrocer's apostrophe, I've learnt that's called. So, because, yeah, there it is, greengrocer, right there, boom.
So she doesn't leave a mistake, and it sticks in my mind whenever I'm in two minds about, like, just pointing it out. And Sam's like, why are you pointing, why? I'm like, but I can't leave a mistake. She's like, yes, you can. So, so I know it's annoying. I know I sound like a terrible human, but I struggle with it. I struggle not to do it, and yet I still do. And I leave my little editorial spore all over Facebook too, which I'm sure my friends can attest. And I'm sorry about that. I don't mean to, but I just, it slips out.
So. See, I do it, but I do it in my head, just because, you know, I'm...
Because it is annoying, really, let's face it. It's really annoying.
You know, it is. I mean, I think if you're attuned to that sort of thing, and I mean, I've got to make mistakes all the time, and I own that. You know, just my writing style is so bleh. But, yeah, I'm sort of, I don't enjoy confrontation, except when I'm, you know, like, really fired up and I'm like, yeah, like, bring it on. And I'd be like, oh, actually, no, I don't really want to.
No, I try to do it in such a nice way because I don't really want to start a fight. I'm just like, hey, yeah. But it, yeah, no, honestly, I must be terribly annoying. Sam's right. So, your question, what would your significant other say is your worst habit? Is it that forgetting stuff, or is it something else?
No. I don't even need to ask her, because I know she has, like, she would have a list a mile long. So, I would say two. Like, one is I have this really annoying habit, and I know I'm probably doing it now, is where I have a big problem when, you know, like, my brain is always ahead of my mouth, so I'll sort of be thinking about something that I can't keep up, so I'll sort of just, like, trail off all the time. So, like, mid-sentence, I'll just stop talking, and she'll be like, and? So that's, you know, But my biggest one would be impulse buying of things.
Well, these things won't buy themselves, obviously.
They will not. And, you know, I sort of think, well, you know, that's a really good price for, you know, six bottles of non-alcoholic spirit. Like, why wouldn't you buy a six-bottle packet for a stupid amount? Or, I really like that Captain Marvel poster. I think I'm going to buy it.
And you do need that jousting stick. You do.
Exactly. Yeah. I do. And I absolutely need four hiking backpacks. So we have a running joke where she calls it my magic beans. You know, like Jack and the Beanstalk, where he goes out and he comes back with magic beans.
Yeah.
And that's the joke, is every time I buy something, you know, we get, like, another parcel turns up, and she's like, oh, good, more magic beans. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, like, I said, well, you know, it's not like we're, you know, destitute at the moment. And that's what we said, well, we will be if you don't stop buying magic beans. So you really need to just stop buying these things, you know, and games as well that I don't play. And I also buy a lot of books that I don't read. So I buy a lot of lesfic. So I bought a lot this year, but I just haven't read it.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's me supporting our fellow authors, but without, you know, it's protecting my ego, but while supporting
right. People.
It's, you know, it's about me.
So next question. What would you rather be doing right now?
Skiing. Mm. Always skiing.
Oh, of course.
It's just... that would be, like, my dream life is just to ski every day. So, of course, that involves, like, my other dream, which is winning lotto, so that I can just ski every day.
You should move to a cold country that has snow, like, oh, I don't know, New Zealand.
I've heard that's a pretty good country, actually. Yeah. I might check it out.
Check it out.
It's actually a good plan. We've been really lucky with COVID. We were in the States, actually, in end of February, beginning of March for... the aforementioned Kate Gavin's wedding, and we also managed to get in some skiing with another Bella author, Kate Haddock-Strong, who very graciously hosted us and her mother at their lovely little lake cottage in upstate New York, so we got some skiing in then. So I have skied this year, but I still feel like, oh, you know, like those 2 weeks in New Zealand that we usually have, just, I'm really missing it. It's like, that's, I just think about skiing all the time. Like, it's my sort of like, skiing, you know, which is, you know, when you live in the tropics, is a bit of a problem. So, yeah. You know, I pull my skis out and I pull my boots out and I put them on and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. thanks guys, give them a loving pat and then put them away. So yeah, but yeah, when we moved to New Zealand, I've already sussed it out. 3.5 hours to Queenstown.
Understand.
Yeah, it's my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next.
Okay, it's the end of the world, Lee.
Is it? No, not again.
It's the end of the world, apocalyptic scenario.
Oh.
What do you grab from your house as you ran away? So I suppose I should put a disclaimer. So you can, things that you can hold and that you can like put in your car to drive off. To like hide in the mountains.
Yeah, look, I know. I'm ridiculous. I deserve to die in this apocalyptic scenario because I've just grabbed my laptop. That's it. I mean, I know. It's just like, but what if the apocalypse lifts and they need that half-written book? And, you know, I would not want to have left it alone in my house to get eaten by zombies. So
absolutely.
So I've taken that, and this is going to sound even worse. And I think Sam might be onto something about the pedantry, because I've grabbed my Collins Dictionary. In my defense, it's not just so I can correct my fellow survivalists on their spelling and so forth. It's just that my mum gave it to me when I got my cadetship, a newspaper, and she wrote this note in it. And it was the sweetest thing. It's like, you know, to help you on your career or something like that. And my mum just never really did these sentimental things. So this is a really big deal for me. So I had this dictionary. I didn't have the heart to tell her that our newspaper style is the Macquarie Dictionary.
Macquarie Dictionary, yeah.
So she'd given me a really beautifully thoughtful brick. Yeah. But I still admire that brick on a daily basis because it sits on my shelf and I appreciate you for that. So in my end of the world scenario apocalypse, I'm just sitting there with a laptop and the dictionary, and everyone's like, well, how soon can we burn the dictionary? And I'm like, yeah, I hear you.
Just or like wipe your ass with it or something
exactly.
Like that. Yeah. And you're no.
I'm just like, yeah, look, just leave me the little dedication at the front and go wipe your asses. Okay.
Yeah. Or you could read them a new word every day and like learn them good.
Learn them good. Oh my God. Wouldn't they hate me? They would so hate me. I think they'd probably eat me first. And I wouldn't blame them. I wouldn't. Like, yeah, no, fair call.
What if there's no electricity? How are you going to power this laptop?
Well, shit. You see what I mean? Dead.
Okay, so you need to obviously grab your solar panels.
Which I'm going to have to buy first.
Yeah, so you better
So I'm going to have to actually anticipate this apocalypse, you see?
Yeah.
This is not ending well for me at all.
This is poor apocalypse planning. I'm sorry, Lee, but you are not on my apocalypse team.
No, I totally understand that. I'll just wave while you go off with your, you know, mercenaries and the guys with all the muscles. So, I mean, I wasn't going to ask you what your end of the world thing is, but now I've just got to know. I'm dying to know. What are you grabbing from the house?
The cat.
Mm.
Just because I love my little kitty, and I couldn't leave her behind. And I've also just upgraded. God, it's horrible. I've upgraded my PC recently and spent a really large amount, which I can't claim on tax because it's a gaming PC, and I bought this massive 32-inch
holy crap.
Gaming monitor, which is just absolutely gorgeous to play you know, games on. So I feel like I would grab like the cat, my PC, and my wife, I guess. Well, she's got legs. She can run.
She can run. She's grabbing other stuff.
And I have to say, and this is probably one of the most embarrassing things I'm ever going to admit to anybody.
Yeah.
That doesn't know me, but I have, anyone who's read Alone might recognize this specific thing, is I have, when I was born, I was given a sheepskin rug, you know, those.
Yep.
Lambskin rugs. So there's this, you know, there's obviously, you know, the gratuitous baby bear bum picture of me on this thing called Lammy, which is like, I guess, I suppose the blankie or whatever anyone wants to call it. And when it just got so like degraded after just like living at the end of the bed under the blankets for God knows how many years. God, this is so embarrassing. That when I turned 21, which was mumble years ago, a friend of my grandmother's gave me a new one. which my wife hates. She hates it. Like, if it touches her, she's just like, get that thing away from me. But as someone who's very, I'm a very tactile person. Like, I love to touch things and I love to smell things. So yeah, I would grab that as well.
Okay, here's the question I was going to ask before. What makes you laugh and what makes you cry?
A lot of things make me laugh, like usually really stupid things. I've got a very obscure sense of humour, a very offbeat, irreverent sort of sense of humour. So I laugh at things that are probably not appropriate to laugh at. A lot of things make me laugh, which I suppose that's such a cop-out answer, isn't it? It's a horrible answer. My wife makes me laugh a lot, which is, I suppose, a good foundation for a marriage.
What makes you cry?
Everything. Injustice.
Yeah.
Animals. God. Like, I'll cry at stupid things. Like, I just cry all the time. Like, I'm just one of those people that are just deeply moved, deeply empathetic about
yeah
a lot of stuff. So, yeah, I'm just a tear bag, basically. But, yeah.
All right, you're up. Next question.
What are three things? This sounds so clinical, doesn't it? I feel like I should be like, so Lee, what are three things I could always count on you to have at any given time? Like, I need this thing, and I know that Lee will absolutely definitely have that.
Okay, three things. Okay, so number one is a power drill, because we have six of them. Six power drills. Look, I swear we're not collecting them. Like, I bought one in my younger days, and then I bought a better one, because people, you need to have reverse on them, and you need to have variable speed.
It's just a given. Yeah, absolutely.
And then I bought one for when I was an impact driver, which is a special kind of drill for going through, like, steel and the tung-tung when you're putting up garages and stuff. Then I bought a really one, this massive, huge thing for going through rock, because when you live in the hills, it's just coffee rock, which is just massive, and you had to crack through that.
Yep.
And then Sam's dad died, and she got his drill, and the other day we were going through the garage, and we found another one, which we think is his. So, you know, I have drills. Come to me. I also have pencils. I don't mean to collect them, but they're just there. I think maybe they're Sam's. I don't know. They just appear. I've got jars of them. And cheese. My house is strong. My house is very strong with every type of cheese. Just love cheese.
So I think my wife might leave you. Like, might leave me to come to live with you.
What are three things that I can count on you to have at any given time?
I love how yours are also thoughtful and mine are literally just like drugs.
Drugs? Oh, okay, let's hear it.
Like, if on my person, if I'm out of the house, I always carry, I carry Valium, because why not? You never know when you're going to have an anxiety attack. Ibuprofen, because I suffer from ocular migraines, so I need to nip that in the bud. And Gastrostop, because you never know when you're going to have, like, an attack of the upset tummies.
You're so practical.
And that is something that was instilled upon in me from my grandmother. You know, I was actually raised by my grandma and grandpa, and it was just something that she just, you know, she used to always have, like, a little medicine bag in her purse.
That's such a Nana thing, though, you got to say.
It really is, and I feel like such an old person, like, saying that. But, yeah, like, and I feel like with those three things, you can kind of, like, combat any, like, physical situation that you might encounter, like, you know, you'll be okay with that. And chewing gum, which is a fourth thing, but I always have spearmint chewing gum, which, my wife hates. She hates spearmint, so. Okay, anyone who follows you on Facebook will have seen your garden photos of your birds, which I admit that I frequently just screenshot and send to Phoebes.
Really?
She's a huge bird nerd. She's so knowledgeable, and she's an ecologist too. Which is her actual job, not her smart PhD job.
Right.
So, what's the best bird? And I also have to ask how the quenders are. How's Dave and co?
Yeah. Okay, first the birds. Well, I love it when the galahs come to visit. They're just so pretty. They're pink, white, grey, really large birds. And they just, like, swoop in and drop and scatter all our various doves and parrots. They know they're beautiful, and they come to rumble. But the best one is the Carnaby black cockatoos, because they're endangered, and it's just so humbling when they come pay us a visit, which is about once a year if we're lucky. And the Quenders, okay, our little bandicoot family. Dave has not been sighted with Todd or anyone for months and months and months since we got the cold weather, and even though we're back out the other side, we haven't seen him. But our garden's got little holes all over the place that are conical shaped, which is the shape of a Quender nose. So we know they're around. They're obviously just, you know, hiding. And to be fair, for 2 years we saw the Quender holes before we saw a Quender, and then this last year it's like, bam, suddenly they're everywhere, and they're virtually skipping around saying hi there, hello, and then now they're gone again. So, you know, they're there somewhere. Maybe. Well, since we're talking about animals, you and horses. Why? How many?
Why? That's a very good question. My family, so my father, from what I recall, was into racehorses. My grandma, my auntie were into horses, and I sort of got into it when I was about 13. And it's actually how I met my wife, which is very, very loosely woven through the plot of Perdida, is this idea of two teenagers who were very much not friends at Pony Club, which she and I were not. We were like rival Pony Club, Romeo and Juliet type scenario, which is interesting. She tells me that she's just shy, but I think she was just mean. So, you know. She wasn't nice, and I probably wasn't nice either, because who is it, like, 13, 14, when horses are involved, and the whole, you know, whispers in your ear that this other riding school is scum and, you know, whatnot. And we met again later on when I was working as a horse riding instructor, and she turned up one day as the new coach, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? That bitch. And I was mortified, and I was sort of like the second in charge of the school. And I went to my good friend Sarah, and I was like, are you serious? Like, Phoebe, like, no, this is not happening. And she's like, well, you know, she's here, so deal with it. And as it turned out, she was actually pretty cool, so, which, you know, yay for us. So, you know, I had horses as a kid. I used to compete a bit, had the world's best first pony, Monty. And then when Phoebe and I got together, I wooed her. She was competing a lot in dressage and is a very, very good rider, very, very good horse trainer. And so I sort of wooed her by coming to competitions and, you know, preparing the horse, you know, plaiting its mane and doing all this sort of stuff and whatnot, and went from there. And when we got together, she at the time had... We've had a lot of horses. I have to think about this. She had five horses when we got together. And then that sort of just ended up blowing out, whereas I got a horse to ride. I rescued a horse, and at one stage we actually had nine.
Holy crap.
Because, you know, we were breeding them as well, and she'd bred a couple before we got together. So, yeah, we had nine, and, you know, like, some got old and were, you know, put to sleep, and they're buried on the property. And but yeah, because we're moving to New Zealand, we've had to sort of make the heartbreaking decision to sell them. And the problem with that is, you know, because we've bred them, we're very, very attached to them.
Yeah.
If you could have any nationality's accent other than the one you have, which I read on a Facebook page, is apparently a very broad Australian accent.
So I'm told.
I think it's just a normal accent, but that's just me. What would it be?
French. Oh my god, how many French characters have I written now? I've written a ton. I am a frustrated Francophile, I think. I love French characters, French people, French accents, and of course, French baguettes.
I think French is a very sexy language.
It is. It is.
My wife learnt it in high school, and she refuses to speak a word of it to me.
Oh.
I think it's just rude.
Very rude. Mm. All right. You can invite two famous people to a dinner party, dead or alive. Who's on the invite list?
Marie Curie, number one, always, without a doubt. I read a Reader's Digest biography of her back when my grandmother used to subscribe to it, and was instantly fascinated. Cannot express my admiration and awe for somebody with a brain like that. And Jennifer Lawrence, because not only do I think she's funny, but I think she also has a brain. I think she'd be a really interesting person to talk current events with.
Yeah.
Bit of a weird mix, but yeah.
So what's your writing process?
In a word, like...
You're a pantser, aren't you?
I am an absolute
flying by the seat of your pants.
I do, which I know probably horrifies you along with a misuse of an apostrophe.
Yes, correct.
I feel like I've gotten a little bit better at planning things, but not to the degree where I go, this chapter XYZ needs to happen, this character arc needs to go to this place, they need to resolve this problem, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, I don't think that sort of style will ever work for me. So I basically have a random idea, which is, again, you know, it's usually like, wouldn't it be funny if XYZ happened? And then I start sort of thinking about various scenes. I write them down. And I have spoken about this before, where I don't write scenes in order. I don't write a book in order. I just have ideas, and I'll write a scene here and there. And then I write another scene, and then gradually I just start to join them up, which I admit, it does result in a lot of wastage. Where I have to remove things that just don't quite work as much as I hate it. But that sort of thing works for me. And then gradually I just sort of tidy it all up and make it look like a book.
I have wastage too, even though I'm obviously a plotter.
A hardcore plotter.
A hardcore plotter, yeah. I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about the story in my head, like imagining it. And then, like, I spend most of that time, because I'm so plot intensive and there's twists and turns and so on, I spend a lot of my time before I even write a word trying to iron out all the bugs and stress test it. And sometimes I'll go to Sam and say, okay, so this has happened and this has happened. Can you see any problems with that? And she'll, well, obviously he can't do that with this over here. And you're like, oh, damn it. And off I go again. When I think I finally figured out all the plot holes, that's when I really sit down and really think about the characters and who they look like. And because I'm very visual, I need to have in my mind a face. Then, and only then, I look at the flow, and then I start to write. And I have these, like, posts along the way that by, say, chapter 3, I want them to have done X, and by chapter 4, I want them to have done Y. I don't actually plan it out in minute detail what I'm going to write. And sometimes the posts move around a little bit, but generally I stick to it. I also don't write out of order, with one exception, which was the Red Files, where I wrote the epilogue with three chapters to go, because I was just too excited to get to the end. It was in my head, so I just spat it out. But yeah, I think I've got a very different process than you do.
Oh, we absolutely do. And I sort of think Sam would be helpful for me. Because, you know, I'll sort of be like falling asleep and I'll be thinking something and be like, so, like, if they got on a Ferris wheel and had a deep conversation, do you think that would be cool? And she, like, Phoebe's like, yeah, whatever. She you know, her choice of reading is, you know, like books about Navy SEALs or like that cave rescue or Everest, you know, like she, the only Les fic she's ever read is mine in its very early stages, which is what I said, I don't have beta readers, I have alpha readers.
Explain the difference for someone who doesn't know what the difference is.
So basically, let's say an author writes a book. So they've written a book, they've planned it out or not, you know, they've been through it, they've edited it, they've worked out the kinks, they've figured out the character arcs throughout, and then, you know, they've polished it into a readable product, basically. And then the next step is generally to send it out to a bunch of beta readers who read through it and give feedback. Either just general feedback, I think, or some authors sort of have a specific set of questions, like, does X work? Do you think that Y is a bitch? Is, you know, this person too ice queeny? I wonder if that's a question in yours.
Never.
Never. You can never have always go full ice cream.
Well, no, actually, Sam hates ice cream, so she always suggests that my character's just absolutely awful, and I'm like, yeah, but you're not my reader.
I'm not a fan. I have to admit that I'm not a fan of ice creams too, but I do enjoy your books. So a beta reader basically reads through and gives feedback that the author can then choose to implement or not. So I in my early books, I sort of used to have maybe three, which was my best friend Kate, who is now very busy with, you know, life. So she hasn't read a couple of my latest ones. Phoebes always reads them. And she's really good because she just sort of approaches it very sort of, you know, like she because she's not a lesbian reader, she's very, you know, the word, not blunt, but she's very straightforward in how she sort of gives me her feedback. You know, like in this chapter, I just sort of felt it was a bit weird that this person did this or whatnot. And then, again, Kate Gavin, who, like, standing for a bit, a Kate Gavin sort of fan appreciation post, who sort of takes everything that I give her and sort of reads it, and gives really good feedback. So I sort of only have two or three people that read it, and they, when I feel that I most need feedback, is actually not once I've been through and edited it heavily. It's when I've written the first draft and I've got the bones of it down, and I need people to tell me, does this work on a whole? Like, does it, you know, as a story, you know, do you think it's okay? And then I take that feedback and rework it. So I always sort of say that I don't have beta readers, I have alpha readers who read a really, and I'm so thankful because, you know, and bless Kate, she's going like, you know, crossing out there's an extra the here, or, you know, did you mean to like use quiet instead of quite, you know, like that sort of stuff where you're just blurting out words. You know, so that's, yeah. So we have very, very different processes. I don't picture face claims really, for my characters. I sort of just have very vague sort of ideas, and I do struggle with research for locations just because I'm not good at reading comprehension or absorbing ideas.
Really?
No, God, research is what I hate it. I really hate it. If you know, you give me a page of sort of things to read and say, you know, tell me the main points of this, I'm just like, what? And I do struggle because I don't like asking for help. And I remember with my debut, I, you know, like wrote about American Army surgeons, which I am obviously not.
Bold choice.
Any of those things. I am not American, I am not military, and I am not medical. And I had to ask people for help, and I've just always been one of those really awkward people that are just like, would you mind if I just asked you this question about, like, your experiences? I've always been one of those really weird people. Research is a big thing for me. I really struggle with it, so I should stop writing books outside of my little bubble.
And you obviously did a good job because Ask Tell did so well, didn't it? I saw it everywhere. Everyone was talking about it. So,
which is funny, you know, it's always, and I think about it and I think, oh, I'd so love to go back and just iron out all those little debut wrinkles.
Yeah, I know, I'm tempted to. You know, files. Oh my God. Adverb overkill. Crikey.
All right.
Last question, I'm ready.
My fragile ego, play.
Yeah.
Some head pats.
Okay.
What's your favourite book of mine that you have read?
Right, well, I think you already know the answer to this one.
I think I do, because I think you've maybe only read a couple of mine, which is no judgment at all.
Well, you know, I don't read military books.
I know.
I get very claustrophobic when someone's trapped in a situation they can't get out of, and most military books, they're either being trapped by war or by sexual abusers, so I don't read military books. But I absolutely adored Alone. I read it, or heard it actually, because I got it on the audiobook, but multiple times. I cry buckets. I love the moment where character A finds out something about character B, which I won't ruin, but it's a big thing. Although, having said all that, I really did appreciate Turbulence for different reasons. I love the Ice Queenie vibe, and I know you don't write Ice Queens, but you know what I mean. The
interesting. I actually didn't read. I think I'd forgotten that you'd read that. Yeah. That's just like.
Yeah. I really enjoy CEO office corporate stuff, and that Turbulence had it in spades, and I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a really good book. But yeah, Alone should have won all the awards, and to me it's shocking that it didn't. Great job, excellent writing, very evocative, and it brought out emotions, which is a sign of an excellent writer.
And I do think, I mean, the audio of it is next level. You know, like I do listen to the audio of my own books, usually like a few times. Just because I use like the same reason I watch movies like 5 times, just because every time you watch, you get something new. And Alone is the one that I can't re-listen to. It makes me so upset because it's, I don't know, Abby Crayton's performance just really like punches me in the gut, and it makes me feel like, did I actually write this? Like, it's so just visceral, and I always recommend you should listen to that one. It's
Abby Crayton does an absolutely fantastic read of it, and I noted when
I agree.
When I interviewed Abby, she cited Alone as one of her favourite, I think it was lesfic books that she's read, and she was quite effusive in her praise for it. So if you don't believe your readers, and if you don't believe me, you can at least believe lesfic's, one of lesfic's top narrators,
yeah,
who's read a ton of books.
And I do, and I say it's a hard book to listen to, which in my mind is probably is the highest praise I can give it. As the person who wrote it, did it. The performance is just so good. Great words. It's good.
Okay, my turn. Pat my ego. What's your favourite book of mine?
I am probably one of the people who don't adore Wreck. I loved it, but it's not my favourite of yours.
Fair enough. It's not for everyone, Requiem. So.
Oh, great book. Brilliant book. But yeah, the audio of Breaking Character rocked my world. Absolutely rocked it, like, and that's one I have listened to multiple times. Angela Dore just knocked it out of the park.
She was a superstar, wasn't she?
Oh, so much nuance, just so good, just like devoured it, just really, really good. And I mean, listen, I know that you and I have sort of spoken about this before, is that I don't love Ice Queens at all. It's not a genre that I seek out, but I do read your Ice Queens. because you're you. So yeah, Breaking Character in audio. I haven't read it, the aforementioned Fragile Ego. but when I was reading Lesfic, and the first book of yours that I read was The Red Files.
Oh, and okay.
And I was surprised when I realised that you're an Australian author. You know, like, look at us Aussie authors writing, you know, all these US books. But the sequel to that, Under Your Skin, I absolutely loved the way that Catherine Ayers sort of, I love the way she softened but never sort of fully sort of broke apart. Like, she was still maintaining her barriers but softening in front of the right people, if that makes sense. Like, allowing herself to be vulnerable with Lauren and, you know, and whatnot, but, you know, then you see the walls come up again. So I just love the way you sort of balance that.
Well, the thing with Ice Queens, I always say, is that they're an Ice Queen all the time, and just because you sleep with one or fall in love with one, they're still going to be an Ice Queen in the morning, just with a bigger smile on their face. And having said that, one of the most delicious things for me about writing Ice Queens is I love the process of melting. And people think when you say melting the Ice Queen, you mean with everyone, but I don't. You melt an Ice Queen just for the one they love.
The one they love, that's it.
Or ones, because it could be family as well. So it's really big thing. They will still be a bitch at the office the next day, but they will always take a certain person's calls, and their voice will become soft and gooey for that person, and then they'll switch back to being a uber bitch to the asshole in front of them. And I do love good Ice Queen. So there you have it, people. That's M Noise, aka EJ Noise, and
EJ Noise,
moi, Lee Winter, on all the skinny on who we are and what we do and what we think.
We have had a chat.
We have.
I suppose we never promised it, but we sort of like, yeah, okay, that'd be fun.
Yeah. We decided we owed our fans. What for? Who knows?
Yeah.
And you might think after the end of that, no, please, no, just don't thank us like that again.
Never do it again.
Understandable.
Which is fine. Everybody's tastes are different, and we respect that.
We do. Well, until next time, which may never happen. Signing off.
I feel like we should have had some, like, funky, like, intro music and exit music.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we weren't organised enough for that. It was
you can feel free to hum it, Em, if you want.